This is Tactical Advantage with John Register, presented by Mount Carmel Veterans Service Center in partnership with Medicare Mentors, Wirenut Home Services, and Star Dental Institute. Tactical Advantage brings news, information, and resources to military-connected people of color throughout the Pikes Peak region. Now, here's your host, John Register.
Hey, great Saturday morning, everybody. Another Saturday of learning awakes us all. Welcome to the Tactical Advantage. My name's John Register, Paralympic silver medalist, combat veteran, change mindset warrior, and patron of the United States Olympic and Paralympic Museum. Because we got a lot of stuff going on today down at the museum. So come on down and be supportive, because it is like we got a lot of stuff. 150-year anniversary of the founding of the city of Colorado Springs. That's happening today. Lots of things happening all across our city. So today our focus is going to be on the National Buffalo Soldiers Day, which was on the 28th of July. Ray Brown is a member of the Buffalo Soldiers Reenactment Group out of Brighton, Colorado, and he's going to be here to share the significance of the Buffalo Soldiers, as well as talk about breaking barriers in U.S. military history. So can't wait for that conversation. And then Donna Nelson, she works for the city of Colorado Springs in the mayor's office. She has worked on a number of programs and projects that impact residents, many of whom reside in the city's southeast side. So she's going to talk about some of those programs, how you can get involved, and it's going to be another fantastic conversation as well. I have always wanted to say thank you to Mount Carmel Veterans Service Center, who provides this service and this show to us each week. And of course, Al Vasquez, sound engineer. He is the golden, deep, melodic voice you hear on most of the commercials. So always give a shout out to Al. Tactical Advantage is brought to you by Wirenut Home Services, Star Dental Institute, Medicare Mentors. We thank them also, because without them, this show would struggle, but we don't, because of Wirenut Home Services, Star Dental Institute, and Medicare Mentors. And you can always follow me, John Register, on johnregister.com. Now, get your cup of joe, grab a donut, turn up your earbuds and speakers in your car, and let's meet our first guest on the Tactical Advantage. Oh my gosh, we have an amazing individual in the room right now. Ray Brown, veteran member of Buffalo Soldiers of the American West, a reenactment group out of Brighton, Colorado. He was commissioned with the United States Army as a second lieutenant and later promoted to captain in the Intelligence Division. That's an oxymoron, I think, for the Army. Welcome, Ray Brown, into the Tactical Advantage.
I've heard that oxymoron comment used before, but thank you very much.
Absolutely. We welcome you here and to the Tactical Advantage. Hey, you know, you're talking about Buffalo Soldiers, and you're a reenactor veteran, so I know what that understands. But before our audience, can you just explain a little bit about, you know, who the Buffalo Soldiers were and how they are today?
You know, that's such a long story. The Buffalo Soldiers were a organization that was founded by the United States government just after the Civil War. These guys were designated to be west of the Mississippi River, and they were there to protect settlers and run with the Pony Express. They protected the trains as they were being built, the railroads were being built. They did all kinds of things, as well as deal with the hostile Indians. And they're a major part of history that some of us never learned about.
So why is that? I mean, we hear all about the Pony Express, and you even have routes that we can follow in today's society where, you know, you can kind of drive some of the Pony Express routes. We have some of the outposts and depots there, but we don't really see the African Americans who were actually doing it. So what were some of the reasons why for that?
You know, I don't know that we can answer why that happened. I think that that the writers at that time were white, and they just didn't see it necessary to embellish the fact that the African American was there. But a fact that a lot of us know is one out of every three cowboys in the western part of the United States was black.
Yeah, that's amazing to me, because, you know, watching some of the shows now, we see a lot of things coming out, and we're unlearning history to actually learn the facts about some of the history. And so you have, you know, the colloquialism and the derogatory comment of a person being called boy, right? So there was the house boy, there was the yard boy, and there was a cow boy. So that's probably how that term came about. And so, but now we use it as a term of like endearment, that we're cowboys in the old West. It's where do we find this information to help us understand a little bit more about the culture and the history of what America's been through?
Well, you know, there's quite a few books that have been written about the Buffalo mm-hmm. Soldiers. There are books that have been written about significant leaders. For example, Bass Reeves was basically the Lone Ranger. He was a sheriff's deputy and went out and did things, captured over 400 men that were, you know, violators of the law, and brought them all to justice. And then he did that without firing a shot, and he did it without ever killing anyone.
Wow, that's amazing. I've never heard of him. Bass Reeves. Mm-hmm. And we can find him in the history books, and he's right there.
You can find him in history books. I think when they decided to make the show The Lone Ranger, they decided that the audience would probably not be as receptive to an African American Lone Ranger, so they made him white.
Wow, so I'm learning history too. I hope you all are out there learning this history as well, as we're talking with Ray Brown, Buffalo Soldiers reenactor, veteran. So where'd the name come from, Buffalo Soldiers?
You know, it's interesting. You know, there's a lot of controversy about where the name Buffalo Soldier came from. And it's quite interesting because, you know, there are three different lines of where that term came from. It could have come from the Native American who looked at the African American on horseback and saw them in buffalo robes and gave them the name Buffalo Soldier. It could have come from a white spouse of an army officer who looked at these gentlemen and said, hey, they look like buffalo. They're Buffalo Soldiers. And it could be because the Native American had a tremendous amount of respect for the African American soldier as they were trying to tame the West.
So when we look at this and the representation, how did the name really come to represent, like, all the black soldiers?
Well, you know, it was originally a name that was probably given to either the 9th or the 10th Cavalry. And I think the African American looked at that and says, you know, I kind of like that. The Buffalo Soldier sounds really good. And they all basically adopted it. One of the things that I'd like to say is that I don't believe that the Buffalo Soldier ended with the Indian Wars. Mm-hmm. You know, when you talk about the Spanish-American War and you hear about the Rough Riders in Cuba, and you hear about the African-American soldiers, they were Buffalo Soldiers. When you talk about World War I, and you talk about the soldiers that fought in Europe, they considered themselves Buffalo Soldiers. Even into World War II, those gentlemen were Buffalo Soldiers.
So we're talking about, like, the Rough Riders. You said the Rough Riders. Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah.
Bully. So he had Buffalo Soldiers that were doing the work.
Yeah, these were men that had been in the military for quite a long time, and yeah, they were in Cuba and they did support the Rough Riders when they were attacking San Juan Hill. So
I think this is, you know, it's important for us to know this about our history, because a lot of times, like, today's market, we oftentimes will not say who were the ones that are actually out there fighting and not have a full appreciation of everybody that, you know, helped to stretch the democracy of America, stretch the flag of freedom, if you will. Do you know if the Buffalo Soldiers were the first organized segregated units to fight?
Well, I do know that they were not the first organized units to fight. You know, what's real interesting to me, John, is that when I grew up, wondering, did we participate? Did we have anything to do with the Civil War? Were there actually black people that fought, or did we just kind of hang around and wait for the outcome of the war? And it took until probably 10, 15 years ago before I actually discovered the United States Colored Infantry, the United States Colored Troops. And as you go back and research even further, you find that the African-American has been involved in all armed conflicts from the beginning of the United States and even before the United States was created. In the French and Indian Wars, the African-American was asked to and was committed to fighting against the Native Americans and the French. When we go to the War of 1812, the same thing happened at that point in time. So, no, the Buffalo Soldiers are not the original group of African-American soldiers.
Yeah, I think that's fascinating. I think many people are learning right now out there in, you know, on KPPF radio land right now. And just, you know, you just bring this depth of knowledge and just so we can all go out there and do a little bit more unlearning to actually learn. I mean, it took me to see my uncle's photo on a mantle that he actually served in World War II, right? Because I never saw us represented in the history books that were written out of the University of Austin in Texas. I never really saw that be reflected in the Vietnam War or in other things that we were studying throughout history, whether it was, you know, 1895 to the present and or the second part of that. So I think it's really important for us to ensure that the whole story is told and understand, you know, everyone's place in that historical context. So, but how did you learn about Buffalo Soldiers and, you know, kind of what got you interested in this?
Now, that's a great question. I was a student of military history. Mm-hmm. I was at the university and I took classes about United States military history, and not one time did one of my instructors say that African Americans participated in the United States military. Mm-hmm. Not once. It took until I went to my first duty assignment, which was in Fort Huachuca in Arizona, that I actually was stationed on a segregated post, a post that was designated as a Buffalo Soldier post. And it didn't get that designation while I was there. So this was back in the 70s. But I started to gather just little bits of information about the fort itself. Mm-hmm. And my mother actually was a big help to me because everything I collected, she kept. And so she gave it back to me. And it's like, oh my gosh, I have this wealth of information that I had no knowledge of. I even learned while I was stationed on Fort Huachuca that they had a segregated officers club. They kept the black officers away from the white officers, and that just kind of just put me into awe and created a tremendous amount of interest in just doing some basic research about the Buffalo Soldier.
And what year was this?
This was back in probably 1977 when I went there the first time, and then I went back in 1983.
So we take like 30 years, you know, almost 40 years later, and now we're starting to see remnants of the push, you know, for, you know, maybe African Americans or Hispanics or those of Native Americans, you know, kind of rising up a little bit higher in the ranks. But, you know, just because you stop a segregated act doesn't mean all of a sudden, okay, we're going to start promoting individuals. That the remnants of that continue to stay with us. You're a third generation native of Colorado Springs. I'm fascinated. You're not a transplant like me.
Absolutely not.
Talk a little bit about growing up here in Colorado Springs.
You know, I grew up in Colorado Springs, and quite honestly, we, at least I didn't know about segregation. I didn't understand life outside of Colorado Springs. It was basically everybody was integrated. We all played together. We went to school together and things like that. But then there are little subtle things that were going on in Colorado and Colorado Springs. For example, we would go to a swimming pool, a city swimming pool, and we could only go on Thursday. Mm-hmm. And so the question finally came up is, why is it that we can only go on Thursday? Well, the guy that was tending the pool answered me one day, and he says, well, that's the day we drain the water. Mm-hmm. So after we got out of the pool, they drained the water and filled the pools up with fresh new water, and we weren't allowed back in there until the next Thursday.
That's not a shocker to me. Right before the turn of 2000, my wife's pool that they had in Crawfordsville, Arkansas, was forced to integrate in 1999. And instead of doing that, they just cemented it in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that was, you know, no one swims, you know. So that's just, I was just in the pool this morning, doing a just 500 meters over it, you know, just kind of quick because I'm inspired by the Olympians, you know, and I was on the swim team. And how many people that we miss because, you know, we fill in the pools. But you grew up El Paso and Cashlapooter Street.
That's right.
Oh, my gosh. The hood. That was the north side of town.
That was the north side of town. That's correct.
It's the north sider. Talk a little bit about, you know, I know you said that you went to Garfield Elementary. I mean, it's still there. I think Garfield
is. Well, the building is still there, but it's not Garfield. They haven't used it as school for many, many years now. But I did go to Garfield and North Junior High School. I would have gone to Palmer, but my mother remarried, and my stepfather took us to England, and so I graduated from high school in England.
Oh, wow. What part of England?
We were stationed at RAF Bentwaters and Woodbridge, and I graduated from Lakenheath American High School in England.
For sure. Wow. That's so that gave you a more depth and breadth of what the world was like outside of Colorado Springs.
Absolutely. It was a very big change for me.
How did that affect you as far as, you know, oh my gosh, I'm in England. Chuddy-o-mite.
You know, I think how it affected me was I was in total disbelief. I just couldn't believe that I was in a foreign country. I couldn't believe that it was such a beautiful place. People were very, very kind and very nice to us. It was a wonderful experience for me.
Wow. Do you think more folks should get out? I mean, like, inside of, I'm talking about the Colorado Springs, southeastern part of the community, how to get them traveling. Is that a...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think, just wisdom is power, and just getting the opportunity to go out and travel and do things and see different people in different places, you gain an appreciation. I'll tell you a side story. I was in Belize, and I was doing a scuba diving trip.
You just hopscotched over to Belize. You just hopscotched over to Belize. I was in Belize.
Yeah. But I was scuba diving over there, and I saw a man who had done some beautiful wood sculptures, and he actually was going to do a shark for me, a hammerhead shark. And I went to his house because we were due to leave very quickly. And I look at this man's house, and there were no doors on the home, and there were no windows. And he kind of looked at me, and he says, "You probably think I'm poor, don't you?" And I said, "Well, yeah, it kind of looks like maybe you are. You got no windows and no doors." And he says, "Are you kidding?" He says, "That would just impede the wind from blowing through my home." He says, "Quite honestly, I'm probably more wealthy than you are." And I had to chuckle about that. I said, "You probably are."
It's amazing that we just always will associate, right, a belief system that we have because of what we have seen maybe in the press or in the news media and say, "Oh, those people over there aren't like me." And we put ourselves on this pedestal when in actuality, probably living a lot more better than we are. We are talking with Ray Brown, Buffalo Soldier, reenactor, veteran. Thank you for your service once again, sir. I want to shift gears. We're going to go back. We're coming up at a break in about 3 minutes here. But I wanted to, you know, just start being in to talk about, you know, you created a U.S. military history display with the subtitle Breaking Barriers in Wiesbaden Aircraft Museum in Pueblo. Talk a little about that display that you have on down there.
Well, first of all, you need to know the name is Wiesbaden.
Okay.
And what we did, and I have to take from Ruth Steele. Ruth Steele had created a Tuskegee Airmen display out at the Wiesbaden Aircraft Museum. And we were giving classes to students that would come in, and we would talk about the Tuskegee Airmen. Well, the problem was is that, you know, the kids kind of looked dazed, and it's like, yeah, okay, black guys fly airplanes. What's the big deal about that, you know? And so I thought, well, maybe I need to change the presentation. I'll talk to them about the Buffalo Soldiers, and then we'll go to the Tuskegee Airmen. So I would introduce the Buffalo Soldier, and they'd look at me with a nice dazed look in their eyes, and they'd say, yeah, black guys were in the Army, no big deal. You know, there's nothing exciting about that. And so I decided, I says, I need to go back, and I need to tell them about slavery. and I need to talk to him about the men that fought in the Civil War, and then the Buffalo Soldiers, and then go to the Tuskegee Airmen. And when I started to do that presentation, then those kids, they kind of like, slavery? Ooh. These guys got out of slavery, and they went into the military, and they fought for their freedom. Oh, I'm starting to understand. And it became more significant to them. So my display now at the museum starts at the Revolutionary War. And I start talking about Crispus Attucks, and I talk about people that were critical to the military struggle as we went forward. And it's very, very impressive, and I think very powerful. What I tell people when they come to the museum and they see my display, I said, wouldn't it be kind of neat for you to go to a museum about history and learn something you don't know?
Wow, that is a powerful statement. We're going to take a break on that one, talking with Ray Brown, Buffalo Soldiers reenactor. And I want to come back after the break and talk about a little about Crispus Attucks, just for our listeners out there who may not know who that is. So if you're on the break, go out and maybe Google Crispus Attucks. Come back, and you're going to hear a little bit more about that amazing individual. Okay, right back after this on The Tactical Advantage with John Register.
Stay tuned for more valuable information on Tactical Advantage on KPPF.
It's time to smile again. At Star Dental Institute, Dr. Gary Moore and his staff specialize in general dentistry, dentures, and orthodontics, as well as sedation dentistry and dental implants at affordable rates. With COVID-19 restrictions being lifted, now is the perfect time to visit Star Dental Institute, Colorado Springs' premier full-service dentistry office and one-day denture service center. The message is basic. It's safe to come back to the dentist. To schedule an appointment, call 719-597-7979 or online at dentalcoloradosprings.com. Star Dental Institute, proud sponsor of Tactical Advantage.
Now, back to Tactical Advantage with John Register.
All right, we're back after the break. You're here on the Tactical Advantage. My name's John Register. We are in with Ray Brown, Buffalo Soldier reenactor. We are having a fantastic conversation. This is part two. I'm glad I get a chance to talk to you for part two. We were, before the break, talking about a little bit of the what you're talking about at the the Weisbrod, did I pronounce it right?
That's correct.
Okay,
yes.
Weisbrod, because you corrected me, and I'm glad he did, because I always want to learn. And we're talking about Crispus Attucks and how you were bringing that in the fold of those individuals who are going down to the museum to learn more about how all of us have participated in our nation's history. Talk a little bit about, for those that might not know, Crispus Attucks. Who was he, and why is he important to American history?
Well, Crispus Attucks is a character that we all learned about in our history books. He was probably one of the very few African Americans that was ever even mentioned in, in U.S. history. He was one of the folks at the Boston Tea Party and confronted the British about no taxes, and was the first he was the first man, the American, basically, that was shot and killed in at Boston Harbor. And started the Revolutionary War. So he was one of those figures that they show a picture of in the in your history books, and we all learned about him. What we don't know is that James Armistead, who was a slave during that period of time, was allowed to be a part of the Union and or the American forces, and he turned into a spy for both the British and the Americans. So he was a double agent, and he operated with the Marquis de Lafayette, and was actually instrumental in giving detailed information about what the British were about to do. And so when the British were forming to attack Lexington, which ended the war, basically, it was because of his intelligence information that the Americans were able to defend against the British and defeat Cornwallis.
So we have two amazing individuals. One, a double agent, James Armistead, and we have the one who started all off, Crispus Attucks, by being killed by, we see the Revolutionary War starting with that spark and then ending with James Armistead. So bookending two African Americans, that, and one being a slave, you know, thinking, oh, we got freedom after this.
Yeah.
But then what happened?
Well, he was returned to slavery. Yes. Yeah. And he petitioned the U.S. government, Congress, and was eventually given his freedom. So this Virginian was given his freedom much after the Revolutionary War.
It seems that we see this kind of rhetoric from the beginnings of the United States happens over and over with those that were supplying the commerce, the economic engine for the country. So those that were kind of doing the backbreaking work. I mean, we didn't really have rice in this country. We had to clear those fields out, and it was Africans that did that work in order to have kind of the big South Carolina gold rice, you know, that the famous gold rice out there. But yet when we go into combat to fight for the freedoms that we are told about, we come back and it seems like par for the course. Have you found that in your work, in your reenactments, that you share some of that part of the history?
Yeah, absolutely. It is amazing to me how much we don't know about our history. And there are countless stories of successes of African-American men and women who gave their lives in a lot of cases to our country, and yet very few freedoms and were ever allowed to those folks. One thing I'll mention that, you know, not everybody understands this point, but the Hispanics were also considered as minorities during a lot of that time frame. And as a matter of fact, the Hispanic population was segregated just like the African Americans were. There were Hispanics that fought with the African Americans during the Civil War. There were segregated units. The Garibaldi Brigade in New Mexico. There were all sorts of folks that were mistreated at some point in time in our history, and we just need to understand that and know it.
You know, I think, you know, what's interesting to me, and we're talking a little bit more on the break, is that we talked a little bit in the first segment, you know, about draining the pool less than 50 years ago. Here in Colorado Springs, right? We saw the Spike Lee movie Black Klansman, and everyone's like, oh my gosh, that really happened in Colorado Springs? Or we see, as you were saying, like in the movie theaters, you know, less than 50 years ago, there was segregation where the balconies had, you know, African Americans who were not allowed to sit on the floor. When you see A Christmas Addicts, and then you have James Armistead and kind of being returned to slavery after foiling the war for Cornwallis, and we see where we are just less than 50 years ago, how do you equate progress inside of your presentation that you do?
I try to show progress all throughout it. For example, here's something that you'll be interested in learning. I'll ask you a question.
Uh-oh.
When was the first African-American allowed entry into West Point Military Academy?
I want to say around 36.
19 or 1830s? 1936. Would you believe that the first two African Americans of 20 that were admitted began their career at West Point Military Academy in 1870, five years after the end of the Civil War? Now, this is a group of people that were penalized for becoming educated, and yet 5 years after the end of the Civil War, the first two of 20 African Americans were given admittance to West Point Military Academy.
And that was 1870 to West Point. Right.
The first African American that graduated from West Point was Henry Flipper. And Henry Flipper graduated in 1877. There were only three African Americans that were allowed to graduate from West Point. And those gentlemen suffered a tremendous amount of pain and agony during the time that they were there. No one would speak with them unless they had military orders to give them. No one would room with them if they were any color other than black. And they would not allow to sit at their dining tables. If they were in classes, they were not allowed to speak to an instructor. If the question needed to be asked, someone else would ask it. And that was basically the way that they were treated and had been treated for quite a long time.
So I think, you know, it's I was off by quite a bit. I should have known, because I remember reading Henry Flipper for the first graduate of West Point. So that should have clued me in anyway on the first part, because it was before the turn of the century. But it seems that, you know, when you talk about patriotism, if we talk about the greatest generation or even before that, it seems that those that have the most to gain and don't get it but continue to fight for it are the greater patriot than those that have it, and it's not really a huge press for them to come back and be, you know. I think the closest thing may have been Vietnam veterans who served in the war and come back and, you know, spit on and baby killers and all these other things that, you know, that's the closest thing to come back. And but every single time you come back, it's like, we're denying you housing, we're going to deny you education, we're going to deny you all these things that you fought for just to open up for everybody else, but we're just going to deny you that opportunity. Do you see that with inside the presentation that you give, and or the shift in people's countenance when you speak about those things?
You know, history is history, and I and there's nothing that's going to change that.
Yeah.
There was a tremendous amount of resistance to allowing the African American to gain much of anything, and when there were gains, they were muted. They weren't allowed to talk about them. They didn't talk about them. It took a long time for us to get to where we are today.
Yeah.
When I do my presentations and I try to not blame people.
Yeah.
I try to give them the history without blame, because the people that I talk to are not the people that were there at that time. There's been a very big shift. And unfortunately, it seemed like there was a shift going back in that direction. But I think there's enough knowledge now that people won't allow us to shift back into this idea of people being less than because of the color of their skin. But I do. I try to my very best to talk about history in its purest form and not to judge these people, because if you start judging them, like I would judge the Congress, the initial Congress that sat around and decided that we wanted to get independence from Great Britain, and I would have said, you had an opportunity to deal with the slavery issue, and yet you couldn't come to an agreement upon that. And so you have to be kind of careful with the blame game and say, here's the history. Understand it. There's a lot more to history than you know. Let's move forward and try to take what we do know now and go forward with it.
I really like that, and that's why I try to frame it as an unlearning to learn.
Yeah.
And so we have learned some history, and the history we have learned is not the full story. So let's go and get the full story if we say that history is important. For us, I want to shift gears a little bit because you brought us some trinkets.
I did.
They're a little more than trinkets, everybody. And I want to. Am I a sheriff now? Because I got these badges. I got all these beautiful badges here. Tell me a little about what I'm looking at.
Okay, it's unfortunate that everybody else can't see this, but what you have in front of you is a Colorado Springs Special Police badge. And it's a story that I'd like to share with your audience. The whole part of that story is that these badges belong to my father. Back in the 1950s in Colorado Springs, my father applied for the Colorado Springs Police Department several times. And each time he would go in and would take a test, and the chief of police would come back and would tell him, "I'm sorry, Jack, you didn't score well enough on the test, and we can't allow you into the Colorado Springs Police Department." And so my dad was kind of disappointed with that, but it was okay. But later on, the merchants downtown in Colorado Springs, and I'm speaking specifically of Fannie Mae Duncan, the folks that owned and ran Giuseppe's, Skateland, those areas, they demanded that the Colorado Springs Police Department hire African Americans to patrol the downtown area, because we had all the black soldiers and the black population of Colorado Springs. Well, the chief wouldn't budge on that. So the merchants, and Fannie Mae being one of those people, they basically said, look, we'll pay for these police officers if you hire, if you bring them on. So with that, the chief allowed two men, Marcus Threlkeld and Jack Brown, to become special policemen. Now, I asked my dad, and I was a very young boy at that time, but I asked my dad, I says, well, what's the difference between you and a Colorado Springs policeman? He says, well, the city didn't hire me. He says, so I have no salary that comes from the city of Colorado Springs. He says, if I get injured or if I die while I'm doing this job, he says, I have no medical or life insurance benefit from having performed this. And I said, what's positive about that? He says, well, I have the key to the jail, so I can put people in and I can take them out, and I have the key to the call box, so if I need help, people will come and help me out. And I said, okay. So these are the badges that my father carried.
They're absolutely beautiful. I think we should take a picture. Al, we should take a picture of these and put them on, the website. Yeah, for sure. So folks can actually see this, because these are absolutely immense. I wanted to actually put one on, but then I was like, I don't got any insurance. So, talking about that, talk about what your father, really meant. What did that mean for you in your full journey, maybe even bringing you to this point in your life?
Yeah, I was very proud of my father. Yeah. He would get out of the car at night and he would say, see you later, alligator. And I'd say, after a while, crocodile. and he would go off to work. He was a very hardworking man. Mm-hmm. He retired in civil service at Fort Carson. He passed away in the late 80s. I miss him terribly. Yeah. But he and his family came from Mississippi to Colorado Springs. They were assimilated into the community. They went to Payne Chapel AME Church.
Oh, yeah.
I grew
still
up there. I grew up in that church. And,
wow.
I have lots of relatives that are still here, which is why I tell you, there's a lot more of us natives than you know.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, Colorado, I love Colorado. This is a really great community. It took about 6 years for it to grow on my wife and I. We moved out here from Virginia, but we just adore the city and, the views, the mountains. It's like looking at Pikes Peak. It's like looking at the freshness of, what the settlers saw as they were going west and like, how are we going to get across that big old mountain over there, right? But Kathy Bates pins the words to, America the Beautiful when she writes that poem. Colin Powell really put a lot of emphasis on Buffalo Soldiers. He began, I know he works on his Volvos. That's his kind of, his off and kind of downtime. But his other passion really was to ensure people knew who these men were that were settling the America West. What do you think that kind of did for your reenactments or people just understanding about the Buffalo Soldiers today?
Well, Colin Powell is, he's instrumental. I mean, he's been there. He's done it all. He was a lieutenant in Vietnam and definitely a model for all African Americans that want to see they want to obtain more than just themselves, as far as the history, he did a beautiful presentation when they dedicated the Buffalo Soldier statue in Fort Leavenworth.
Mm-hmm.
I have part of his presentation and he talked about the United States, and he talked about the liberties that were granted to all Americans, and he specifically talked about the minorities and said, these are not liberties that were granted to us, and it's been a long, hard struggle. Mm-hmm. He's not the only one that struggled through that, and I'd like if I had a chance to talk about people like Charles Young.
Mm-hmm.
Benjamin Oliver Davis, yes. Sr., Benjamin Oliver Davis, Jr., John Ernest Green, because those people, they came before us, they stood up, and whereas my hero was people like John Wayne, my hero should have been Charles Young. And now that I know about him, they are they are truly heroes in my mind, and I want to do nothing more than to talk about them and to tell people their stories and try to explain how important they are in our history, not just black men's
right.
history, but the United States history.
U.S. history, absolutely. So where do people find you to hear your reenactments?
Oh, well, I can be called, and I would go down to the museum. The museum, by the way, when you go down to the Wise Broad Museum and you look at my display, which is right in front of the B-29 bomber, that display is just a wall of pictures. It's a wall of black faces. And it's the display is entitled U.S. Military History and subtitled Breaking Barriers. And when I talk to people there, I say, let me teach you something about history that you don't know. Mm-hmm. And that's what I do, is I show them step by step, person by person, that these people were there. They were important. There's another gentleman that nobody has even talked about. And before the Tuskegee Airmen, this man was from Georgia. He traveled to Europe and ended up involved in World War I and fought for France, became a pilot. Mm-hmm. When the Americans entered the war, he asked, could he join the Army Air Corps? And they said, absolutely not. We don't allow blacks.
Went over and fought for France. I mean, kept pilot in France.
Yeah. So we have people in our history that are significant and very, very important, and we need to recognize them and honor them.
Absolutely. We've been talking with Ray Brown, Buffalo Soldier reenactor. Oh my gosh, what a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So make sure, if you haven't gotten down to Wise Broad, you better get down there in Pueblo to go see this fantastic. I mean, if you're looking at history and you want to see that, not just about the B-29 bomber down there, but the wall of photos with our U.S. military history. If you're a history buff and you want to know the full story, you need to educate yourself. Get on down there. We'll be back with more on Tactical Advantage and John Register.
Stay tuned for more valuable information on Tactical Advantage on KPPN.
If you're Medicare eligible and military connected, Rich Lewis and Medicare Mentors will guide you through setting up coverage to make sure that you have the right options. Call Rich Lewis at Medicare Mentors at 719-886-3377. Medicare Mentors, personal guidance at no cost consultation for military connected service members. Committed to advocate for you today and all of your tomorrows. Proud sponsors of Tactical Advantage.
Now, back to Tactical Advantage with John Register.
Hey, welcome back to Tactical Advantage. My name is John Register. We are in studio with Donna Nelson. Welcome.
Thank you, John.
She is board member. Oh, thank you. Yeah, I should let you finish that, but for sure. Board member for Mount Carmel Veterans Service Center. Works for the city of Colorado Springs in the mayor's office. Her exact title, Spirit of the Springs Program Leader. Hey, tell us a little about, what does that mean, Spirit of the Springs? I see you. You got great spirit anyway, so Spirit of the Springs.
Yes. So Spirit of the Springs is a program that was created by our previous mayor, Mayor Steve Bach. It was his vision to celebrate and connect our community in different ways. And he asked me to bring his vision to life. It's a couple of different things when we honor folks. Our Spirit of the Springs Celebration Awards is one of them. And he knows that whenever the mayor honors anyone, it's a big deal. The media will come. And we use these stories to inspire other people to do great things in our community.
So when did, you know, we had COVID going on last year.
Yes.
How did all that kind of take place with Spirit of the Springs and, you know,
yes.
you know, moving that forward?
So we didn't do many Spirit of the Springs Awards mm-hmm. last year. We did do one that we always do called our Inspirational Leader Award. Mm. Our Lifetime Achievement Award.
Okay.
Now that award is normally given once a year at the Chamber of Commerce's State of the City. We did do that. That was mostly online. There were a few people in person. And for that, we honored Mr. Bill Hybl.
Oh.
Yes. Not that they're done doing work, because we know that Mr. Hybl is not done doing work, but he has done so much for this community. And we use stories like his and many other just regular everyday citizens who do great things to, again, to inspire others in our community to keep doing more, to give back.
Yeah. It looks like Kyle's following right in his footsteps.
He is.
So when you talk about, you know, the city and our first strong mayor, Mayor mm-hmm, Bach, you know, and then we have a legacy being left keeps continuing on with Mayor Suthers. Talk a little bit about, you know, how does this really impact kind of the entire market that we see in Colorado Springs, you know, mm-hmm. for who makes up the population of Colorado Springs?
Right. So Mayor Bach had a very tough job being the first strong mayor. He had to break down a lot of walls and make a lot of changes. Mm-hmm. He did that well. Some people didn't agree with some of the things that he did, but he really set us up for success. And we were very fortunate when we got Mayor Suthers in behind him, because Mayor Suthers is a professional who has been in this industry of politics mm-hmm. for a very long time. And he's a lot of trust with a lot of people who are decision makers throughout our state. So he was able to take what Mayor Bach did and propel it forward so much, so well. And that's why we have a lot of great things that are happening, like with City for Champions being successful. Mm-hmm. We got our downtown stadium now, which is great. Just a lot of things. Our Olympic Museum, which opened last year during the pandemic, which, you know, was kind of crazy, a little bit difficult, but it's still going on. And so there's all of that. Of course, my favorite thing about Mayor Suthers is that he kept our Spirit of the Springs programs alive. And it's not just the awards that we talk about. One of the big things that I love is the Mayor's Cup golf tournament. And you think, some people think, great, another golf tournament and politicians. And it's not just a golf tournament. It is a fundraiser. And it is a fundraiser that raises money for scholarships for women and people of color who are interested in careers in public safety. And I talk about Mayor Bach a lot because mm-hmm. one of the things that he wanted to do when he became mayor is he saw there was not a lot of diversity, not a lot of women in leadership positions within our city, and he wanted to change that, specifically in public safety. Mm-hmm. So he did some things. He didn't just talk the talk. He walked the walk. This scholarship, I'm happy to say that I started this in 2012. This is our 10th year this year.
Wow.
And in 10 years, I've grossed over $1 million, netted right around $700,000 profit. 80% of that has gone to scholarships, again, to women and people of color who are interested in careers in public safety for the city of Colorado Springs, not any other city. The other 20% has gone to a few other nonprofit organizations mm-hmm. around our city, like Colorado Springs Forward, that started after the fires that we had. Mm-hmm. We helped with Leadership Pike Speak to start a teen program. And then now we helped launch the chapter of Pike Speak, First Tee of Pike Speak, which is a local chapter of an international organization here in Colorado Springs that teaches students core values, things like leadership, honesty, integrity through the game of golf.
Sure.
And so we have that program here, and it's been very successful. So I love it.
You know, I was thinking, 10 years now. Congratulations,
yes.
you know, the DECA. when you look at that, so there must be some great success stories that you have seen from the first ones that you have awarded this. And can you share any of those amazing success stories?
Yeah. One of the other things that I do is called Ticket to Success. It's a middle school program. I have no background in education mm-hmm. or starting school programs. So when Mayor Bach gave me this task, I said, sure, I got it. Left his office and said, who can I call? So got a group of educational leaders around me, and we figured out how to create this program where we teach middle school students about careers in municipal government. It's an 8-day program over the course of 7th and 8th grade, 2 years. And I tell you, to see these students from day one to day four in the first year and then again in the second year and see how they grow and they mature, it is amazing. And then we have them go on to another program we created called Young Champion Ambassador, our Young Champion Ambassador program. Some of them get into that program and they learn how to be ambassadors representing the U.S. abroad. I have one student who went through both of those programs, and she actually was the runner-up last year in our Young Champion Ambassador program and went to Greece with us and was in the torch relay on the ancient grounds in Greece. Being an Olympian, you know how amazing that
is. Yeah, I got goosebumps just when I heard it. But yes. I think she was I can't remember her name, but wasn't she the one that was did the she sang the national anthem at the opening ribbon cutting
on
top of Pike's Peak?
Yes.
Yeah.
Shreya Krishnan is her name.
Shreya Krishnan.
Yes.
Fantastic
young lady.
Just a wonderful young lady.
I don't know when she sleeps.
I don't either, but she did a great job up there.
Yes.
I don't know how you sing the national anthem on top of Pike's Peak because there's no oxygen up there. It was cold. It was wet. Oh my God!
Yes.
And but she did a fantastic job.
That's her. She's one of those success stories. She's been through actually all of my programs for dealing with students. And she remember that name, people. Shreya Krishnan. She is going to be a leader somewhere in the world and make a huge, huge difference.
She's doing it already. I mean, she's leading. You know, even in her school, she's she is at the top in her class. She's just really pushing and people follow. They follow. They see the strength in her character and a large in part to your programs that you're putting together.
And I remember when I first met her. I mean, her parents have a lot to do with it too. When I first met her, she was so quiet and so shy.
Well, she ain't quiet now.
No, but she's blossomed into a beautiful young lady, and she's still in high school. She's not done, and she's done. These are just a few things that she's done.
Well, you talked a little bit about this, the Colorado, sister cities, and so we have, on today is the 150th anniversary of the founding of Colorado Springs.
Right.
So talk a little bit about that. What's going on? I mean, I see all the newspaper stuff and all these history and trivia things happening, but today is the day.
So today is the birthday. Happy birthday, Colorado Springs.
Happy birthday, Colorado Springs.
I would sing, but that would mess up the interview. today is our birthday. 150 years ago, there have been a lot of different things leading up to this day. We have a beautiful exhibit at the Pioneers Museum. If you have not been, you have still plenty of time. I believe the exhibit will be on display at least for the next year, if not longer. Mm-hmm. We've got great celebrations happening downtown Colorado Springs. A big parade, history through time, starting at the Colorado Springs Historical Pioneers Museum and going through time, ending at the Olympic and Paralympic Museum, which just opened, and that beautiful pedestrian plaza on Vermejo. So, and in that, there's a lot happening to honor and celebrate where we've been, where we are, and where we're going.
And I'll be down there for Fan Fest. So I'm hosting Fan Fest down there, so I can't wait to get out there today and see the parade. Come on in. I'll be, come on over. We'll get you on the mic and get you on the air to just share with Olympic City USA. I mean, no other city in Colorado or in the United States can call themselves home to the United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee, as well as the museum that holds our greatest treasures of the athletes that have participated in those games. Talk a little bit about, we had Shreya, and she's gone to Greece and Athens, but we also have Tokyo and Japan as another city. Talk a little bit about that relationship.
Yes. So we have seven international sister cities. A lot of people don't know this. Our first is Fujiyoshida, Japan, a small city at the base of a mountain, Mount Fuji, one of the most visited mountains in the world. And when we became sister cities 59 years ago now, it's almost 60 years, we are a city at the base of a mountain, Pike's Peak. And so we share that in similarity, and we have a very close relationship with them. Aside from last year, they send a delegation of students over every year. We go over often. We were last there in 2017 learning about smart cities and how to make Colorado Springs a smart city. We learned a lot from that and are actually working on some things since then to make our city a smart city. Most recently, ancient Olympia, Greece, became our sister city in 2014. They are the birthplace of the Olympic movement for the world. And we get to go to Greece every year. During Olympic years, we take our Young Champion Ambassador, which is the contest that we created for high school students. It is an amazing experience. Mayor Suthers went with us when we went the first time for that Olympics and for the Summer Olympics. And it was... Even he was in awe, and he's not easily awed, to be there with all of these world leaders and see the torch. They actually still use the sun to light
the torch.
It's a beautiful ceremony, and it starts there, and our ambassador gets to carry one of those torches through the streets of ancient Olympia, and they bring that torch back with them. We donate it to the Olympic Museum, so we've brought back the last three torches from Olympics for our Olympic Museum. It's a blast. We love it.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, you're talking about the Olympic and Paralympic Museum. That we're down, we've been down the plaza again today. And the whole Park Union District that's kind of come up, and it's alive now with the stadium, as you mentioned, as the Olympic and Paralympic Museum, the new Park Union Bridge going across, the rail tracks, all those things, you know. What's planned, you know, in the last couple of minutes we have here for, like, the southeast part of the community?
Right.
I see kids still walking down that dangerous road on Circle across the bridge going to school because mom and dad are going there at work. You know, they're not really dropping the kids off and the transportation not that bridge. So it's this little Jersey barriers there to keep them safe, but you know the bridge can use some work there.
Absolutely. So I'm so glad you asked that, because the city is doing quite a bit for the southeast part of Colorado Springs, and I'm happy to say one of my colleagues, Mr. Yemi Mobilati, local entrepreneur, business owner, and he is also, I wrote this down, he is the Small Business Development Administrator for the City of Colorado Springs. Mm-hmm. He and a team of other business leaders and community leaders have been working on a plan and talking with the folks in the community, because the best way to figure out what people want is to ask them.
Yeah.
And so they've been working for the last little over a year, actually, with people in the southeast side. And so they've come up with three different themes, as well as three different projects that have kind of come out of all of those conversations. The three different themes are promoting entrepreneurship and job creation, access to services, and affordable housing that prevents displacement. And I say that because people are really not interested in having their neighborhood gentrified and then they're forced to move out. So that's why that's big important piece. Affordable housing that prevents displacement. So the three big projects that have come out of those themes are investment in funds for self-esteem for entrepreneurs, a family service success center, which I believe is in the works right now. I've heard some work about that with Pikes Peak United Way, and affordable housing projects. So there is work actively being done. There is a team of people from the city and from the community that are actively working on these three big things right now. And then there's going to be three more after that, and then three more after that. And we're going to keep this ball rolling.
All right.
Again, this was a big priority for Mayor Bach. It is a big priority for Mayor Southers. And I'm sure it will be a big priority for our next mayor.
Fantastic. We've been talking with Donna Nelson, board member for Mount Carmel Veterans Service Center, working for the City of Colorado Springs in the mayor's office. Her exact title, Spirit of the Springs. Thank you so much for being in with us.
I need you with me every day, John. I love that. Thank you.
You're absolutely welcome. All right, everybody. We are about to wrap up for this show, and we'll get you wrapped up on Tactical Advantage with your host, John Register. In today's tough economic times, it can be hard to make sure you're working with companies that have your best interest at heart. Because of this, you can count on the Wire Nut to go the extra mile to make sure that you and your investments are protected. You can trust the Wire Nut for licensed HVAC technicians, master electricians, and plumbers. The Wire Nut is your complete home service company. They strive to make sure you are comfortable in your home and that your home is safe. Call the Wire Nut Home Services at 719-465-5902. Online at thewirenut.com. Proud sponsor of the Tactical Advantage. All right, fans, that does it. Another show is in the can. So what else is coming up? Fan Fest. I'm going to be over there at 10 o'clock this morning, hosting all this day and Sunday as well. Fan Fest is 4 days of fun for the entire family. Celebrate the Tokyo Games Fan Fest during the Colorado grand opening of a U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Museum in downtown Colorado Springs, Colorado. All weekend long, we're doing some fantastic interviews. So come down, get your autographs, because there's a lot of stuff. Come on down, come on down, come on down. It's going to be off the charts fun. So if you want more information about me, just shoot me an email to info@johnregister.com. Make sure you are spreading the word and sharing with your neighbors about the great information you are learning on the Tactical Advantage. If you are liking the show, get the Podbean and leave a comment. We are here every Saturday morning, 8 o'clock a.m. KPPF Radio, or stream it online at kppfradio.com. A great big thanks to all our guests today for sharing their wisdom with us. Follow me throughout the week and get all my social media handles on johnregister.com. Remember two things: when truth outweighs fear, we commit to a courageous life, and always go forth and inspire your world. My name is John Register. Thanks again for listening. Talk to you next week on The Tactical Advantage. Bye for now.